Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and my co-host is Austin Chadwick. And today we have Roni Jokinen, and we're going to talk a little bit about mob programming in the game development world. So Roni, can you go ahead and just introduce yourself and maybe talk about it a little bit, and we'll get into it.
I'm currently Director of Technology at Nitro Games, where we develop shooter games for mobile. I have a background in like being an entrepreneur, and so I'm like working as a programmer or with a mix of leadership, like analytics, product, depending on the kind of like a place I've been at that point, and of course like in the gaming industry. My interests generally are kind of like how to leverage technology to create games, and especially nowadays, like very interesting, like how to utilize more programming and TDD and all that to do a good job with that on the engineering side. So that's kind of the brief of it.
All right, yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there. I think that mobbing in the game industry, I'd be really interested in hearing your take on that. What do you mob on? Is it just code? Is it code and other disciplines? How did you get started mobbing in the game industry? All of that, right?
Yeah, broad question, definitely. I think that the first thing, what we started with was like, when I started as a tech lead where I'm currently out of Nitro Games, like I have had like, had some experience in my previous company with pair programming. And I really saw that like in a different kind of situations, what kind of like, benefits you get out of it, be it with working with more junior person or like a more senior developer, like teaching me something new, for example. And I really saw the power of that. And that got me like thinking and looking for and around like, where does it make sense to use and like what kind of benefits we could get out of that. And then I ended up like watching Dave Farley's videos a lot. And I think there I learned a lot of like good new things about like TDD and all that. So that's kind of where my journey started, like more further down the line for all the mob programming and TDD. So we started doing it a lot in our current company, like on like a more like payment systems, for example, which we use in like multiple different games we make, because like those are the kind of high risk areas that you would benefit from them extra quality, for example. And just after we did it for a while, we really saw that the issues that we might have had earlier doing the same type of systems, like we really didn't face them as much because we were able to give that feedback like very early on and find the issues. Also, like the one big thing which I saw is that the general like micro level code quality improved a lot, and we were able to like to get into very common understanding of how should the code look like on that level as well. So not only really just the high level design, which is of course like the very, very important part as well, but on the micro level as well, like people starting to produce more same type of code. And I think that's where we started from. And now actually, now that I've been doing other things besides programming as well, and I've seen like the benefits of like figuring out things related to finance, for example, and those kind of things. Like I remember like we did some protoing on some kind of like Excel tool with my CEO in our company, and we did that for a few hours together. And you know, you can really bounce out ideas a lot, and I think that's a really good benefit. And I also I really like the social aspect of the whole thing, because I'm not probably the most social person, but still, and programmers tend not to be maybe the most social persons, but still I really started enjoying like doing work much more, because the kind of issues that you could have and could ponder on your own were much easier to solve when you were like bouncing off the ideas with someone else. So that's how I so in addition to all the benefits, like started seeing that kind of like human side benefits as well, not just the technical benefits. So I guess that would be the gist of it. Yeah.
Right on, right on. Yeah, I have a whole host of questions. And maybe because unlike Chris, I'm less familiar with the game development world. So I'll be maybe asking some basic questions, but maybe that'll help the audience as well. So one thing that stood out to me right away that was interesting is when you think of game development, you usually immediately jump into like, you know, 2D or 3D graphics and like all, you know, all this kind of stuff. But games also have kind of similar aspects to regular enterprise development, right? Like payments and, you know, yeah. and those kind of things as well. So that was a good insight for me to see that. So I know in like traditional enterprise development, there's like, you know, front end, back end, and, you know, UX designer and those kind of things that may or be in and out of the mob. What are the kind of different roles in game development in your experience? Yeah, just to kind of set the stage a little bit.
Yeah. So how usually, I think the one big difference to, I guess, to other type of development is that we will always have a designer. Like there's always a game designer involved. And yeah, of course, like if you do any kind of like a game which doesn't involve only a few people making it, I think you always want to have like a UX designer or UI designer, depending, like, of course, the roles can be mixed a bit, but, you know, UI UX is very important, especially for mobile games, because, you know, people don't have too big attention spans, so you have to be really good with all of that. Of course, developers, you tend to have a lot of, like, there's less of, I guess, full stack mentality in game development. It tends to be a lot that you have the client developer. So for example, in our case, Unity developer, Unity game engine, and then you would have like a backend developer, which is completely separate. And they might have some skills in, of course, building build pipelines as well. But that might be also a separate person as well. And I think what I've been trying at our company as well is trying to get people to engage more towards like being a bit more full stack, because there's a lot of benefits in that as well. So yeah, in addition to that, like having a game designer, some like a UA UX designer, having a programmer's client and backend programmer, you would have, of course, like a producer, depending on the kind of like if you're running more agile or more traditional way, I think there tends to be like project managers, or there tends to be then if you're running Scrum, like the normal like product owner and Scrum Master. I guess that's the like the very core. And then of course, like if you're doing a 3D game, you need like 3D artists. If you have a 2D game, you need someone like, of course, doing those graphics as well. So I would say that's like the gist of it again. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I've actually been doing Unity development with my kids. And so it's the roles in that mob are a little bit different than what you described, you know. So one of them likes to jump on my back and like hit me on my shoulders while I'm driving, you know, and so that's kind of his role. No, but that's the manager. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Just kidding. All our managers out there.
Yeah. We love you, managers. So no, that was a great description. I really appreciate that. And, I think, maybe a two-part question is one, what have your current mob experiments been? Like what set of roles, kind of in the game world? And then where would you like it to see it go? Like what roles would you love to see start mobbing that maybe aren't right now, or pairing or something like that?
Yeah. Actually, I forgot, of course, adding the QA part. Of course, we tend to do a lot of manual testing. And I think that's maybe something we can discuss later as well. But so our mobs usually have had just programmers from now on. But I would like to see a lot of, and I've been already engaging these kind of discussions where like bringing bit like a BDD into the process and including like a project manager or product manager into it, and the designer, like figuring out what does the feature should have and how should it work, trying to like de-risk all those kind of like possible issues we would be getting to if we are not discussing how the feature should be when we are actually starting to work on it. So we have had one experience already where we did have designer present, and I think that already gave us a huge benefits, and we already like saw some issues with the feature, which we then discussed at that point. And it was like a few hour call, and maybe people are not like too used to that you have so much like discussion when you try to work on the feature. But I felt like that after that call and working on some kind of like a test already there and figuring out some like bare bones, how the feature should work on the code side as well, and doing some prototyping on the UI. Like after that, we only had to have like some kind of shorter discussions, and we were able to like finish up the feature quite well. And the feature would end up being what the designer were looking for. Of course, it was nothing perfect yet, but I feel like getting more into that direction and including like QA to that would be very helpful.
Nice, right on. I had one more question on the mobbing piece, maybe before jumping into TDD and Agile, which was, so you're a role as director, right? So do you write code as a director, or is it you more have a more leadership only type role?
Yeah, so officially my job description doesn't say that I should be writing code, but I feel like that a lot of times it's the best way for me to like drive our technology to the right direction is to just go pair with someone or mob with someone. So I think that's like has been the biggest helpful thing I can use as a tool to like affect the engineering culture we have.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's Chris's style as well.
Yeah. Right now, I'm spending an hour with each mob and kind of rotating through, and that's been pretty fun and really helpful. I wanted to ask, so in your mobbing sessions, how did you approach? So was this just kind of an experiment? Did it result from like a retrospective and were the team members receptive to it? Because I know in the game industry it's probably a less known term, mob programming. So maybe you can just talk about a little bit about how the team reacted to the beginning of mobbing, and what changes did you observe with the team once they started mobbing?
That's actually an interesting thing, because when I started, like I thought about that a lot, like how can I make us. It's kind of a bit of a controversial thing. Like people think that you're wasting a lot of time there, and it's like, but I didn't have to go through too much struggle against like trying it out. Like we started with just, we had to build like a login system, and we started with that. Like I was pairing with someone, then we had another person coming into that working on it as well. And we were doing it, the three of us. And then like we figured out one part of the feature, then they might work on their own stuff for a while. And then we had some sessions again with the mob or pairing. And when we tried it out, I think everyone pretty much had positive experience with that. And because we have these like programmer meetings few times a month where we discuss like the kind of things that we've been working on and how some things have been working. All of the like people I did some mobbing or pairing, they thought it was a good thing, but they also thought that we should be like looking out for the things that we should mob on and the kind of things that maybe we shouldn't mob on. And I think there are some things that maybe it's not the most helpful thing, but I think in the end, there's a lot of things that it is very useful. And I could see myself moving more towards like pairing or mobbing on pretty much everything, but that's a even bigger cultural change, I would say. Yeah. Well, but the fun thing was that now that I took my hands off completely of the team and we had more people coming into the team, which we started the experiments with, now they're doing caring and mobbing completely on their own without like me being present at all. So that was like the one of the biggest like milestones for me to see like that people actually find it helpful without me being present at all. So that's great.
Yeah, I'll just throw this out there. When somebody tells me like, oh, we don't think that this task should be mobbed, a lot of the time then I ask, should it be automated? Because most of the time when they're saying it shouldn't be mobbed, the task is so simple, but they have to, you know, and if they're going away to do it over and over again. So I always have that question kind of ready and queued up in case, in case that kind of instance comes up. It's like, well, you know, does it make sense to automate this thing? And chances are automating the task would be valuable, and it probably is a mobbable item rather than a solo kind of one-off thing. So might consider that.
Yeah.
So this might be a good time to transition to test-driven development. I've tried to do test-driven development in Unity before. It's not very forgiving with mono behaviors and everything along those lines. And I know it's gotten better. How did you get TDD started? And what types of things are you using TDD for? I know that it's kind of a controversial topic in the game development world as well. And so, yeah, maybe what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that, like, I think most of the companies like I've spoken with or been in, like, there's barely any, if any, automated tests. So yeah, that's like the first thing. Like, it's a very manual heavy testing. I do think that there's more role for manual testing in games than there is for other software, because like it's such a like subjective experience of like playing the game, like how does the animation work and all that. Like, it's, I guess you in a way could a bit automate like checking does it work as it should, but in the end, like, it's more about like the feeling, how does it seem like that it work as it should. But then there's a lot of that just pure logic, like checking out like how does it work. If I buy this item, am I actually getting it? Is it decreasing the amount of currency I have? Like, am I getting logged in? Am I getting notifications? Is the analytics calls going through when I do this? So, and just, you know, am I taking damage when I get hit by something? So that's definitely up for automation. So there's not really anything that's blocking that. And I feel like that maybe there's a little bit of that, like, throwing the baby out with the bathwater kind of like thinking, because you can't automate everything, you shouldn't maybe automate anything. So go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it reminds me of a friend I had a company or two ago, and he told me his story of entering the game world, because he was a game developer before he joined kind of more enterprise non-game development. And he says, like, the entry into the world was manual testing, right? And so his role as manual testing wasn't like what you said, like the stuff that's hard to manual test, like what's the experience like and the kind of more qualitative stuff. He said he was like, you know, spending hours on end, just like hitting the edge of the map everywhere and making sure there were no glitches where you just like fall out into, you know, space or something. And so it just makes me wonder, not knowing so much about the game world, is it maybe, you know, it's similar with non-game development where there's certain things that are really, you should just automate, you know, like, you know, that's super easy to automate. And there's other things that it's like good to have like a three amigo, like developer, product person, designer discussion and manual test together before release or something like that. And so it makes me wonder if the same thing in the game world, where it's like there's a whole suite of stuff that could just be automated and other stuff that should be left to a manual human experience to test. Yeah.
yeah, definitely. I think like we are now trying to look at the boundaries. Like, we established 6 months ago like a platform team which works on the kind of features that pretty much every mobile game uses, and they are very much up for all like fully automated test suits, like the things I just mentioned, like inventory systems and payment systems, you know. Nice. Quest systems and all that. Like, it's, there's nothing that can't be automated there pretty much. But yeah, continuing that, the last time I had to struggle with Unity automated test runner was this week. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of issues there. I could go on about on a full rant of like what I hate about it. But when you've been working with Unity a lot, you kind of understand that some things are just not like don't work that well, and you just have to get around them. And usually you can find some workaround. But we definitely had to do a lot of our own tooling there to get it like working very well. Because for example, there's problems that whenever you go to a next test, it's not tearing down everything that was created. And like you have to manually tear down everything. And like if something if a test takes only a one frame, it might leak some additional stuff to the next test and all that. Like you just have to do it and test it out and then fix those kind of issues. And we have now built like a good tooling around all of that to mitigate all of the problems. So I think that has been one of the most important things to make it work really well. So
I also, I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, it might not be common for people to make DLLs when working in Unity projects, but if you write unit tests for a system and write DLLs outside of Unity and then import the DLL after it's been compiled, it's a really easy way to get some code coverage without making a huge pain point.
So actually, interesting fact about that. Unity is not very good with like dealing with DLLs. I've been having to do some like reverse engineering and decompiling and recompiling some DLLs because of that in like past few weeks. But like you have those assembly references, which are pretty much like Unity's own like a DLL, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And yeah, one thing which I forgot to mention is that like only about like 10% of our tests are like anything to do with like the frame-based system and the game world. So most of them are just, you know, plain old C#. And that's how we want it. Like whatever we can make with only plain C#, we want to make use of, because there's the problems with Unity. And of course, like why run code which can run out independently of Unity in the Unity's like whole system with the mono behaviors, because it can introduce a lot of problems. So we try to work and minimize the amount of like usage on Unity wherever we can. And that tends to be like the core logic being like pure C#, and then all the views, like the things that you see on the screen and animation, all that, like that's the Unity part.
That's very similar to the enterprise world when you have a web UI front end single page application framework, and testing where something on the screen is on the screen is very, very difficult. And so those are the types of things that you run into for sure.
Yeah, and maybe this will show my lack of understanding and the fact that I've only had a little bit of Unity game development time, but it feels like a similar problem that I see with testability in non-game code is that a lot of the tutorials, you know, so for example, me and my kids are trying to, you know, we have this game where you finish one level and we want it to jump to the next level when you're done, right? And so we're watching a tutorial online and someone's like, oh, here, make a C# script and then tied it to this part of the visual part of Unity. And they're just throwing in libraries after libraries that they're directly binding to jump levels and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought about it now. I'm like, yeah, that none of that is out of the gate testable, right? You know, if you just use the library statically and directly, right? And I'm wondering if that's where maybe it seems like your style as a leader is just to start pairing and mobbing with people and just invite them to start making it with you, is where you could just be like, well, instead of binding that directly in the game world, is there a way to like inject a seam there where you could make it more testable? Kind of thing, or
so probably people unfamiliar with Unity are a little confused because they'll say, why don't you put an interface on that or mock the dependency? So mono behaviors have private methods that are accessed by the game engine, therefore making it more or less fundamentally impossible to test them. And so you have to use sort of a there are ways to do it, but they're not very friendly. But and it turns a lot of Unity developers off to unit testing. And so had lots of conversations about this. But yeah, I don't know, Roni, if you have more to say to that.
Yeah, definitely. Like the general rule would be to try to stay away from monobehaviors as much as you can, but it's definitely, of course, you have to use them, and they are good at showing stuff. That's what they're good at. So I think kind of like they say, exactly the same principles apply from like traditional software development as they do for game development as well. The tools are just different.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Maybe we can transition to another thing in the game world, which is DevOps. So, so what comes to mind for you for DevOps in particular in the game world? Is it an established thing, or is it like TDD where it's against you're swimming upstream to do something in that world?
Yeah, well, of course, depending on what is meant with that, but I think for me, in a nutshell, it is like actual like CI/CD, and then like of course like you have to have some build pipelines there, and you know, try to get something working, hopefully with tests, and to try to integrate it as soon as possible and try to get it working on the end devices in a production environment or as close to production environment as you can, as quick as possible from like adding the feature. That's what it's more like for me. Of course, there's more to it, but that would be in a nutshell. Build pipelines are, yeah, they're pretty much everywhere that there's even just a bigger production or more like a little bit advanced from the beginner stuff. Like there's build pipelines, basic build pipelines. Then like adding some delivery, automatic delivery on top of that. But the CI part is not too common. And I think it's probably not too common like in software world either. Because for me, at least what CI means is that like at least once a day, you put your code into a common branch, and hopefully you don't branch at all. So for me, it's more like a trunk-based development kind of thing. And that's kind of like the thing that's not seen too often. And we are still like learning it a lot. But for example, with the platform team that we have now is that we don't have branching. We have strict rules that we want to try to get at least something new working from every developer every day into the master branch. And like trying to keep the build in a green state all the time, because that's one of the big problems I've seen like in many places, is that there's so many big features added. I've done this myself as well, of course, like making a huge refactor or making a huge feature, which might at worst take like 2 weeks. And then there's these like edge cases that there's a different branch for 6 months, and then they try to merge it in. But like try to keep the build green instead of like having it broken. And then there's like a build days where you like use multiple days to like fix issues that you've introduced, because there's so many new features put in which might not work completely together and all that. So I think so far the CI part, the trunk-based development, has worked for us in the platform team quite well. Like we have a monorepo of all the packages that we are developing there, and like there's me and this one client developer who add code there. And if we are working on something in that repo, on most days there's at least one, usually more, commits a day, and we keep the build green. But that's still something that we are learning a lot, because it's a really like a kind of different kind of thinking, and we're getting into the feature flags. We have some basic systems there already in place, and we're getting there.
Cool. Yeah. And I guess in non-game development, there are some small wins that can kind of be coached in, where, you know, if you're pairing or mobbing with someone, or you're just coaching a team, just be like, well, instead of doing 3 days of work and then trying to, you know, merge it back in one pull request, you know, like, hey, let's just do one little commit and push that up into the pipeline. In the game world, is it possible? Is it you know, as simple to do small commits? Is it more just like a mind and human switch? Or are there specific challenges in the game world to doing smaller commits and more trunk-based development stuff?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, if you don't build your software, games are still software. Like if you don't build it in a way that allows you to do smaller commits, like it's hard to do smaller commits. Like if everything is dependent on each other, you have to do these big changes before you can safely commit something into the master branch. So I think that's the major issue there, which we really had to think about and like try different kind of things before we got the trunk-based development working to some degree in our platform team. Because like if the architecture doesn't work well, it's just impossible. And there has been times like I had to, even in the platform team's repo, where I had to use multiple days in order to get a commit in, because like we kind of like spent some time to build a system which kind of wraps all the like the Unity parts which are kind of ugly to something more easily to work with. And that's kind of very hard to test, because the whole idea is to like encapsulate all of that complexity, and then they're hard to test kind of things. So whenever I have to touch that code, or my colleague has to touch that code, like that's maybe one of those like where you can really see that, hey, this is how we tended to do all of the kind of features that we work with. And now that we have tasted the other way of doing stuff, like it feels very horrible to get back to that kind of like development where you have to work on multiple days to get the thing working. And if you get something else working, then something else breaks. And like it brings back those bad memories of development, because the one reason I wanted to like pursue more of a like management path is because I got really tired of developing like that, like everything breaking all the time. And I really wanted to see change into that. And it's harder to do from a programmer role than from a management role.
That was one of the big selling points for test-driven development for me, was not only could I protect my code, but I could also make it so that no one else breaks my code too, and I don't break theirs, right? And so that was, that quickly became, well, I have to go into management to convince everybody else to use TDD.
Nice. Yeah. And I guess it just highlights a common theme that I guess I'm starting to see. So over my, 10 to 15 years of software development, I've noticed that, code is code, depending whether it's, very functional JavaScripty or more class-based, C# or C++ or whatever, that a lot of principles apply. And I guess it's maybe the same thing applies to the game world, is like things like the solid principles or pick your favorite design principles. Those things still really apply. Like, so just like in enterprise software, no matter what language or technology you're using, you want to really separate the UI from like the business logic, right? And keep those two things very independent. And I guess that's even more important in the dev world, because the UI is a very complicated beast, as you were describing there, right? So if all your changes are wound up in there, it's going to make your life really hard, right? Where if you're able to separate things out, then I could see that making it easier to do small commits without like recompiling the world or retesting the world and all that kind of stuff. And another question I had in the game world is that, so for pipelines I'm experienced with, some pipelines just go straight to production. I guess that's I always forget the distinction, continuous delivery versus continuous deployment. Is that the distinction, right? Where one just always goes straight to production. Or another one is there's like a human manual button you push to be like go to prod kind of thing. And so I'm guessing in the game world that it doesn't go straight to prod from changes, right? It has to go through that manual phase. So is that basically how the pipeline, it operates up to a point and then it pauses for kind of the manual quality check, and then the button will go through to the production?
So that's how it usually tends to work. Of course, we all the time we try to look for ways to like automate even more. Like there's automation for putting up all the builds up to the store, and basically the only thing you would have to then do is check the information on the store listing, like screenshots and all of that. Like if nothing else, then there's like the app reviews block you from like straight going into production. So because Apple, for example, takes kind of a long time to let your app in new version of the app in and all that. There is that manual part, of course, but we try to make it smaller the further we go. But yeah, never straight into production. I think it will never be that way, because there has to be at least that like wait for the review, and there's no reason to then like no business value of like pushing it straight into the production then.
Chris, this might be a bit of a tangent, but we've had experience using Fastlane to automate the deployment to mobile stores. Yeah. Would that apply to the game world too?
Yes, we actually use the same technology. Haven't gotten too far with it yet, but we have some pushing APK to the internal track, for example, at the moment.
There's definitely, so there are just more stores than enterprise would normally deal with. So there's the Play Store and the Apple Store, but now when you're talking about video games, and actually there's some enterprise apps on Steam now as well. So there's Steam, and then there's the Epic Store, and then EA Origin and all of those. And so depending on your target audience, you may be on any one of those platforms. But yeah, Fastlane is for sure one of those. Some of the store's policies I know are that you must have a human deploy it. They actually, in their terms of service, they will disable your account if you're automating the deploy. So it just depends on where you're at.
For non-game dev, Roni, we had one app we were working on that had about like 120 manual steps to get it into the stores. And once we automated that, oh, it was nice. Oh my gosh, yeah. It was so nice to automate that.
And that's 100% true in any iOS or Android app. There's a lot of steps. And then iOS has, human gated quality inspection on the Apple side, which is a beast in of itself. In the early days, yeah, it was weeks long. Now I think they're down to days.
Well, maybe the last topic to touch on before closing out is, what's your, we've kind of hit it in a mini, kind of more from a technical side, but what's your take on Agile in the game world? Maybe what's your soundbite there before we close out the show?
Yeah. Of course, it works a bit differently in each company, but again, like, I think it's probably quite the same as in software world, that there's a lot of like companies like use Scrum or some other like technique, but in the end it's not like, there's some agility to be seen there, but it's not necessarily like strictly speaking agile. But like I think that's the kind of like learning path that we are on as well, like learning how to do it well. And that's actually one thing that I'm currently working on as well, is just to try to, like, now that we have some of the technology, and the further we go, we do have the technology which allows us to do it better, which like, but that's only tooling part. So, but now that we have the tooling part, it's easier to do things in a smaller batches and getting something like on a device to test it out. And then of course the aspect that, hey, let's not just start with creating a huge task list of new features that we want to do, but let's instead think of the problems that we currently have. For example, let's say that a lot of people drop during the tutorial part of the game at a certain step. And then like identifying that through like data analysis. And then once we identified that, then let's first think of like what could be the solution here. Instead of just going through like making new features or task list of like things to be done, but instead think of the problem and look for solutions to that. Of course, that's a very simple like example, but there are more, like the further you go in the development, the more complicated the problems become. Like it might be that players churn after 5 minutes of gameplay, and it can be very hard to figure out like why is that, and then you might have to like start testing out different kind of approaches how to fix it. And mobile games especially is like a very data driven like industry. Like we deal a lot and a lot with data. So I kind of like that a lot. And I'm a huge fan of like A/B testing and all of that, because like it's a great way to like identify issues and then like troubleshooting through it, testing different approaches. And then when you see the increase in playtime or straight up revenue, like that's the best feeling ever, at least for me. So
cool. Yeah. And I guess it seems like kind of the value proposition of agility, like, you know, ability to adapt to changing markets would definitely seem to apply to game dev, which seems like a very dynamic market, right?
It's not, yeah.
Yeah, so I could definitely see why game companies or game development would be interested in figuring out how to adapt quickly with high quality and those kinds of things. So So I mean, that's awesome that you're all on your journey, and as we all are at different points on it, and that's fantastic. We are hitting our time box. Is there anything you'd like to share or plug before we close the show?
Yeah, this was a great experience, definitely. The time flies by, like it has been almost like 50 minutes or so. And that's nice it's nice that you have me here. It was nice to talk to you, and hopefully I should maybe start watching your podcast like even more and see like what other people have to say as well. And maybe there's a lot to learn there as well, because it's good to look outside of game industry with these kind of things, because in the end it's still engineering a lot, and there's the same type of human issues. We just apply it to create a different kind of product. So my journey started from looking at how they do software in like a high performing organization. And I think that was like a very good thing for me and in my organization. So looking forward to getting further down that path.
Right on. Cool. Well, it may be one of the first plugs of plugging our own show. So we appreciate that, Roni. that's great. And everyone, please like and subscribe. We love hearing your feedback on YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all the various places. And love seeing the comments coming in. And we really appreciate that. Yeah. And please share this video if you know someone in the game world who wants to hear about someone's experiences and practices they're on an adventure with and learning, whether it's mobbing, pairing, you know, TDD, solid principles, DevOps, and agility. Please share this video with them, and let's keep the conversation going. And until next time, mob well, everyone, and have a good one. Bye.
Bye, everybody.